to the official podcast for St. Philip's Episcopal Church in Rochester, Michigan. You can learn more about our church at our website, stpfeeds.org. Our Sunday services are at 8 and 10 a.m., and all are welcome. This podcast is the sermon for Sunday, March 24th, 2019, by Eric Williams.
While in the service, we're going to play Stump the Priest again. The youth group has been coming up with questions. But honestly, the theme of our gospel today is the biggest stump the priest, pastor, whoever you can think of all time. And that is the classic question that really every believer, every Christian, and I believe all other religions too, who believe in a loving God who is all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-loving, has to wrestle with. And that question is, why do bad things happen to good people? It's a toughie. We wrestle with that question all our lives. We look at events happening in our lives, the people we love, and there seems to be no fairness, no sense to it. Tragedies happen, sins are committed, which are unpunished, and we just wrestle with, why does this happen? Well, it's a question that Jesus got as well. In today's gospel, there were two events that were the water cooler discussion in Jerusalem in the time of Jesus. One of them was a group of pilgrims, religious pilgrims from Galilee, Jews who had come down to Jerusalem to make sacrifice at the temple, were for some reason rounded up by Pilate and executed. Pilate mingled their blood with their sacrifices. In other words, for some reason not known to anybody else, this group of all the thousands of pilgrims, this group got singled out to be executed by Pontius Pilate, who was a bloody tyrant, really, in the descriptions we have from the first century. And people were like, why this group? Why them and not us? Why them and not somebody else? Did they do something wrong? Was it their fault? Was it just that Pilate was being capricious? The other event was the collapse of a tower, the Tower of Siloam, which may have been one of the towers in the wall that encircled Jerusalem. One of these towers was poorly built. Maybe they use the same kind of cement that we use in our roads in Michigan, I don't know. But for whatever reason, it collapsed, and 18 innocent people were killed. And so people were asking, why them? Did they do something wrong? Did God not like them? I was saying before church or after the 8 o'clock service, the classic joke, you know, the whole book of Job is about this question, why Job has to undergo all these things. And I've told this joke before. It's a horrible joke. But at the end, you know, Job is wrestling with why God is doing this to him. Finally, God shows up at the very end of the story. And in my version, not the Bible version, but in my version, God says to Job, I don't know, Job, there's just something about you that ticks me off. Sometimes it can feel that way. It can feel that we're being singled out by God for some unknown reason. We wrestle with that. So Jesus has this question, and they're waiting. What's the rabbi going to say? What's Jesus going to say about this? And Jesus, who is so clever, changes the subject. He says, no, I tell you, it was not their fault. It was not the fault of the Galileans. It was not the fault of the victims of the tower collapse, but, and then he turns it around and says, unless you repent, you will perish just as they did. Stop worrying about other people and take a look in the mirror. I think that's a tough lesson for us. I was watching a documentary yesterday after I recovered from the lock-in. I had to take a nap after that, but I was watching this documentary about a story I'd sort of heard a little bit about some years ago, and then they made this documentary. It's about a company called Theranos. I don't know if you remember this story, but this wunderkind person drops out of Stanford, Elizabeth Holmes. She's 19 years old. She drops out of Stanford, and she decides she's going to start a company which is going to change the world. She's full of idealism. She's brilliant, and she gets all these people to invest. Hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. She gets a board of trustees that is absolutely incredible. people like, oh, George Shultz, Henry Kissinger, James Mattis, and on and on and on. She gets the star-studded board. She gets all this investment, and her goal is to create a different way of collecting and analyzing blood. You know, you go to the doctor, and they take out a whole bunch of blood. They stick a needle in your arm. It's not pleasant, and they have to take a lot of blood to get all the tests done. She said, what if we could do that with nanotechnology by taking one little pinprick from your finger and run it through this magic box that would do 200 tests? You could almost have one in your house. You could do blood tests whenever you wanted. It would be cheap, easy, painless, and perfect. And everybody bought into this idea. There was just one small problem, which is what the documentary is about. It didn't work. And what I found so fascinating was the kind of mindset that led her, apparently, from being this wonderfully idealistic business founder and owner to sort of making compromise after compromise. And the mindset was really, in this documentary, part of the dark side of Silicon Valley. You know, everybody looks up to Steve Jobs and others who said, we're not gonna let anything be the obstacle, we're just gonna make it work, it's gonna work, this kind of overweening confidence and optimism. But the dark side is that it leads to a kind of exceptionalism. We're different from other ordinary human beings. We're special. We're exceptional. The ordinary rules don't apply to us. And once you start thinking that way, it becomes easier and easier to make trade-offs and morally questionable actions. And in Theranos' case, the whole thing snowballed and caused a huge catastrophe. She may actually go to jail for what she did in that company and others as well. It was a great sort of moral lesson as I was watching that, and it made me think about these scriptures today, because the same kinds of attitudes that infected, I guess, certain people in Silicon Valley, we can look at them, or, you know, we can look at the people who, last week, who were bribing their way into college. That's the same kind of exceptional thinking. The rules don't apply to me. They're for ordinary mortals, but I'm special and different. If we look in the mirror, as Jesus invites us to, we can fall into that same kind of thinking, comparing ourselves to other people and beginning to think that we are different and special. Sometimes in religious terms, we can do that because we're holier than other people. We go to church. We make these kind of unwritten contracts with God. Okay, God, I'll be good. I'll go to church. I'll give money. I'll even volunteer. I'll be on the vestry. I'll be a greeter. I'll be whatever. And then the unwritten part is, and then nothing bad will happen to me or my family. How many people have had their faith shaken or destroyed when that unwritten contract falls apart? When we do go through a tragedy, where was God when I needed God? I was there for God. Where was God when I needed God? Why did those bad things happen to me? And that's why it's so important for me to see how Jesus responds. Because Jesus does not answer the question, why do bad things happen to good people? He says it was nothing that they did or didn't do. They were in the wrong place at the wrong time. But I tell you, and then he gives us the right question. And the right question is, what are you going to do with the life that you've got? You may live 100 years, or you may be hit by a taco truck tomorrow, and it could all be over. You may live your life free from any illness or disease, or you may die in childhood of leukemia or cancer. There is no rhyme or reason to the way those things happen, but the question is not what the fig tree over there is doing, but what are you doing? How are you using the time that you have? That's the parable that Jesus told right after this. The fig tree that would not produce fruit. I'm sure other fig trees were producing fruit just fine. Maybe that fig tree was looking over and saying, well, yeah, the gardener spends a lot more time on that fig tree. Or the other fig tree is, you know, it was born to be bad. It's just a stunted fig tree. But I'm special. I'm unique. I should be producing fruit. And instead, the gardener says, let's give it some more time. God has given us time. God has given us this day, this lifetime, this moment, and our task is to do what we can with what we've got. You think back to Moses encountering God in the burning bush. God told Moses two fundamental things. One, I am God and you're not. Right? I am who I am. Why are you asking me for the name? Are you trying to be on my level? No, you're not on my level. I'm God and you are not. That's the first lesson. And the second lesson, equally important, is I will be with you. I'll be with you when you go up against Pharaoh. I'll be with you when you're leading those whiny people through the wilderness. I'll be with you when they're hungry and thirsty in the desert. I'll be with you to the end of your days, and I will be with you as a people when I lead you into the promised land. I am God, and you are not, and I am with you through everything. You have this life, this day, and this moment to please God and to bear fruit. And the good news is that God is with you. One of my parishioners in New York went through the troubles of Job. She had so many things go wrong in her life, and she was a woman full of the Holy Spirit and faith. And I remember her saying, you know, people are always asking, why me? And she said, I've come to a different question. Why not me? Why would I be different than anybody else? Why would I be spared from any of the things that happen in human life? And by asking that question, she was able to enter into the life that she had and still has, with faith, with joy, with confidence, with trust in God, to endure all the difficult things that she went through, those valleys of the shadow of death, firm in her relationship with God, in her knowledge and experience of God's mercy and grace and love. And she became a light to other people, an example of faithfulness and a source of great strength. I pray that as we wrestle with the things that go on in our lives, as we ask God, where are you in the midst of these troubles, that we will always have that assurance that Moses had, that Jesus had, that the disciples had, that God is God, and that our aim in life is to please God, and that God will always be with us through every trial and tribulation, that God will bring us through until it is our time to enter the promised land, to dwell in the fullness of God's light and love and presence.